Radio Influence. The future is now.
You know her from network radio, but now she's on the net and in your head. This is the Fabulous Sports Babe on Radio Influence.
Hey, it's me. It's the Babe Cast. We love it, don't we? Now, I must tell you, I have many, many things to talk about. First and foremost, Kevin Kennedy is going to come and join us. Manager, broadcaster, everything, been doing the Dodgers for a number of years. We're going to talk a little about the National League West and a little bit about the National League. I've known Kennedy for a long time. You'll hear it goes on and on. We talk about Montreal. We just talk about everything. He's really great. And so we're going to have a good time with that. You know what? I was going to tell you about, you know, I have no life. That's why I watch TV all day. And I don't want to say anything. I'm sure it was nice in New York, but it was 83 degrees here yesterday. I had all the windows open. I was like, do I turn on the air conditioner? I'm trying to go one whole month without turning on the air conditioner. And so far, it's not so good. But anyway, that's what's going on. Now, we have to do things. Oh, I know what I was going to tell you. American Ninja Warrior. Yes, was on. It was the All-Stars. It was more confusing than I ever saw. If you watch it, because if you get nuts like me, or remember we did someone one time and he said, oh, my 11-year-old loves it. I go, well, I love it too. So I'm watching it. And if you watch it, they go up 14 feet. Now they've made it up to 20 feet. Who the hell can go up that far? And I asked Roller Girl and she said, well, I'll push you up. And I said, well, that was at 14, but that's not going to happen at 20 feet. I love him. You know why? Because he's Kevin Kennedy and I'm the Babe Cast. I love myself as the Babe Cast. Do you like that? It's the Babe Cast. I'm loving myself. I am the Fabulous Sports Babe. Let me just talk about some things, because if we look out there in the National League West, if I'm a Dodgers fan, the Dodgers must win. If I'm a Giants fan, they absolutely have to win. So what do you do there if you're, I mean, because it's not like you have one team and the rest of them are behind them. I mean, you've got two of them that you fight for all the time there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, the Giants are doing it from within. I mean, every one of their infielders last year was from within the system until they traded Duffy to Tampa Bay, as a matter of fact. And their outfield, you know, the same thing, Williamson and Parker. And you know, so the only free agents they signed were like Pence when they traded for him, and then they re-signed him, and then Spann. And Posey, of course, is from the system, and Bumgarner's from the system, and Matt Cain is from the system, and you know, Romo and their relievers were all from the system. So they do it the old-fashioned way. And, of course, they don't have the money to go out and do a ton. Where the Dodgers, other than Seager and Peterson, I mean, they'll buy guys, and then if they don't, you know, if they got to open up a roster spot like Darren Ruff of Philadelphia, they already released them. They traded for him for Howie Kendrick, and because they wanted to open up a roster spot for Utley, they just released him. They're just eating money right and left. I will tell you this.
Tell me.
You know, it's tough. Ownership, I know, is, you know, it's not easy. They're not having because they want to win it all, and they're not totally happy, I don't think.
Let me ask you some things here. Let's talk about the World Series. I mean, it was this wonderful Indians team against this great Cubs team, and what we saw, and I was looking at it and I thought, I think at one point Indians were up 3-1 and then the Cubs came back to win the last three. I mean, they could have been out at any time, but it was a great series. And if you want it, I mean, it was a great series. And I thought, you see it. I mean, like, do I say, oh, this was a better series? That was a better series. Maybe it's the last one that I only remember. But
no,
it was,
I thought it was
great.
Fantastic. No, there's a lot of history because the Indians hadn't won since 54, and the Cubs hadn't won since 1908, won it all. And Cubs get down 3-1, and there's home field advantage. And for the Indians, they go back home, and the Cubs had to beat them in their ballpark, and it was going back and forth. And then, of all people, Rajay Davis hits the home run to tie it up, Roldis Chapman, and then, you know, it goes extra innings in the seventh game of the World Series. I mean, it couldn't have got any better. I'll tell you one thing, because I've been watching the National League so much, even though you do play American League teams, but I've been seeing the Dodgers every one of their games, obviously working for them. I didn't see the Indians that much last year, and we didn't play them, and I didn't realize how good they were. You know, some of these guys, the third baseman, Jose Martinez, and you know, I knew Kipnis and Lonnie Chisenhall and those guys, but some of those guys, I don't know they were that good. And they were really, to a man, I mean, they were deep. I mean, I knew Andrew Miller, but Cody Allen, I'd never really seen before, you know, what his numbers were, and I didn't realize what a good curve he has with his fastball. So my point is, I didn't realize how deep their team was until I saw him, you know, in that World Series, or the playoffs, actually, goes before the World Series. Once I saw them, I said, when they were in the divisionals, I said to myself, watching them, I said, this team's going to go to the World Series, mm-hmm. no doubt, especially the way Terry was managing, too, with Andrew Miller.
I love Terry, and I was so glad that he did so well, and he comes into a team that's been really good and then been awful, and everything turns around in a couple of years. But I love Terry. I thought he was terrific there, and you know how I feel about Madden. I was glad that Madden went to a place, they gave him a bazillion dollars, and they got the World Series. I was happy for him.
Yeah, Joe did it outside of the box like he always does. He had a ton of players, but he managed his proactively, which is when I was there with the 2 years doing games, I did like that about Joe. You know, he manages proactively. What I mean by that is, you know, you bring in Aroldis Chapman in the eighth inning and you got Rondon there, you know, sitting there, but he's not going to take any chances. Or you bring a Chapman in the seventh inning, or even that last game against the Giants, he brings Chapman in and everybody's second-guessing him, and Chapman ends up giving it up. You know, Connor Gillespie hits one off the wall in right center, and the Giants come back and take the lead. But then, you know, Ben Zobrist gets the big hit off of Romo. And, you know, it's just, you know, Joe does things outside the box. But I call it proactive. And if you watch the Dodgers and you watch Cleveland and you watch the Cubs, those three teams, those managers use their closer in situations that guys never used to do. Now, personally, from a personal standpoint, I used to like to use my closer in the eighth inning. I remember when I had Tom Hanke in Texas, and he came to us in 93, and I said, Tom, I know with Dwayne Ward in Toronto, you only pitch the eighth inning and he pitched the ninth or vice versa sometimes. Can you pitch in the eighth inning? Because we don't have a setup guy, and we have a very young bullpen. He said, sure. Because I said, I'd rather have you pitch it against Ken Griffey Jr. and Edgar mm-hmm. Martinez and Jay Buhner. So point being is he did it 18 times. He saved 17 games in the eighth inning. And we almost won the division against the White Sox. And the only guy, you know, with Don Mattingly for 5 years in L.A., he never used Kenley Jansen in the eighth inning, never. And after the game, if they blow it in the eighth, Don would say, well, it was his inning. And I would go nuts on the postgame show trying to be, you know, nice about it. But I shoot you straight.
Yeah.
And I would say, you know, it's not his inning. It's the team's inning. If your eighth inning setup guy doesn't have it, how can you lose a four-run lead and not get the ball to Kenley Jansen? And I saw Dave Roberts last year, who had never managed anywhere, and Dave was proactive during the season. He used Kenley a few times in the eighth inning last year for four-out saves. And then when it got to the postseason, he used him, my God, he was using him too much almost, you know, in the mm-hmm. seventh inning.
Mm-hmm.
So he did things that you know, Joe Maddon used to do, but Dave has learned a lot by playing and for a lot of different guys and by coaching in San Diego, but he was much more proactive than I anticipated, so that was good. And then Tito's been around, so you know, Terry did that with Keith Foulke in Boston when they won that first World Series. People may forget, when they came back and beat the Yankees, he used mm-hmm. Foulke in tie games in the extra innings, I mean, three innings at a time, because they couldn't afford to lose. And that's the reason, the way he manages, why they end up winning eight in a row after being down 3-0 to the Yankees. So I love that kind of managing, and I hope it doesn't change. I hope, you know, certain front offices don't put lineups down and say, no, you can't do this, you can't do that.
You know, I was thinking about this. Kevin, you're 20 years away from the Red Sox, but did you feel anything when it happened? I mean, when it finally happened to me, I thought I was just going to spend my whole life and I'd never get anything. I would love the Red Sox, but it would never happen for me. And it happened, and then it happened again and again. And I was like, did you feel any of that closeness, even though it was 20 years ago?
Well, when I go back there, people still are very good to me. I still get sometimes on Twitter people saying, you know, you should have stayed there. You could have won this and that, you know. And in fact, I saw a tweet yesterday. I guess John Valentin, I think, did MLB TV. I don't know if he did MLB Radio, but somebody tweeted from MLB Network that I guess he was a guest analyst, and they put that his WAR was the best of any Red Sox infielder ever. And that's even better than Mo Vaughn, meaning, and I'm not big on war and all that stuff,
yeah.
But, you know, John hit 27 home runs, knocked in 102. I put him in the two spot that year, and he hit 298 and stole 20 bases, and he played a good shortstop. And I didn't know that his overall, and he had a lot of doubles, many more walks than strikeouts, and he scored, I don't know, 100 runs. And I knew he had a phenomenal year. But my point is, I thought about guys like that didn't get a chance, you know, and Johnny got hurt later on. And I thought about guys like that when they won. I said, gosh, you know, we were there, and we had a lineup. I mean, we had a really good lineup in 95. We just didn't have enough pitching. And had we won game one against Cleveland that first year of the wild card playoffs, which went, 13 innings, I thought we were going to sweep them. I really did. I told the guys that in Cleveland in our meeting. I said, we are good enough to sweep these guys. Roger's going to go out and pitch well, and they know it. And we end up, you know, going ahead 2-0, and they end up tying it. And goes out there. Leo Salcedo, of all people, ties it again in the bottom and the top of the eighth. And Nehring hits a home run to put us ahead in the top of the 12th. And unfortunately, our closer, Aguilera, slips in the rain.
Yeah.
Tears a hamstring, and yeah. Albert Bell hits a home run, and then Tony Pena, of all people, it's one the next inning we lose it. That first game was phenomenal. I thought about stuff like that, but no, I was glad for the fans.
You know,
I was glad for them. But you know, I the only thing that bothered me is that, you know, it took a front office genius to do it, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And it's really about the players, you know. I mean, when you get Manny Ramirez, who, you know, little did we know what he was doing, but I think we could suspect it. But when you end up going and spending that kind of money and getting Manny Ramirez, I guess selfishly you say, gosh, I wish he would have done that when I was there, you know, and I wish he would have gone out and got this pitcher when I was there, and, you know, and traded for Pedro when I was there, because I was the one that was involved trading for Pedro from the Dodgers in Montreal. I mean, and Dan did give me credit for that back in those days. I mean, I traded for Wetland and Pedro Martinez when I was with the Expos when I left the Dodgers. So, you start thinking about that kind of stuff. But not from a selfish standpoint. I mean, I was happy for them and happy for the team and really happy for the city, because the fans were actually and still are really good to me.
You know, one of the things that we see, and I sit here and I watch the Rays, and they're over there, and I didn't even go at all last year. And I was like, because I don't even know who's on the team half the time. I mean, with three guys that's on the team. But let me just ask you, one of the places, they might go to Charlotte, they might go to Montreal and all that. And I go, you go to Montreal and they'll be fine for the first year, but I'm not blaming, I don't think it's going to happen. Yet you were in Montreal. So do you really think there's a place for, let's say, the Rays to go to someplace like Montreal?
Oh, I hope so. I loved it. We were talking about that the other day, Rich Herrera and I. I loved it. I loved Montreal. And I tell people, it's interesting that one year I was there, because Dan made me the farm director for 8 months, and he promised me if he made a move, he'd put me on, you know, in the dugout as a manager or bench coach. Well, sure enough, that's what he did in May of that particular year of 92. So I was a farm director for 8 months and then became the bench coach, and the team was in last place on that date. And I became the bench coach, and Felipe Alou took over as a manager, and he was a difference maker. And together, you know, we worked great. And, you know, the team was young. It was, you know, I was fortunate enough to have John Wetland in the Dodger system forever. So we made that trade the winter before, I never forget, because I knew him better than anybody else. And he was a guy that the Dodgers gave up on. And I told Dan, I said, get this guy, he can close. And he ends up being the closer of the 90s, as it turned out. But, you know, stuff like that was fun to be involved in that. But people were telling me that, you know, on the West Coast trip, they always went on the West Coast right before the All-Star break. And they said, if Montreal loses on the West Coast after the All-Star break, you won't see anybody come out and watch them play. If they win on the West Coast and have a good road trip, you're going to see them come out and follow them. So, as it turned out, we go play the San Diego and the Dodgers and San Francisco. I don't know what I can't remember the numbers, but we had a good trip, 7-3, 8-2, whatever, something like that. We go from last place all the way to, second place. And when we got back from the All-Star break, the team got a standing ovation, and we're drawing 35, 40,000 a night. And the people love baseball, and you used to take their form, the Metro, which is their form of the subway, the cleanest I've ever seen, beautiful. And you know, I lived on a street called the Maisonneuve, right across the street from the Forum, which was where the Canadiens played. And you get to the ballpark in 10, 15 minutes. The Metro was right down the street, and I lived in the same building as Moises Alou and that great announcer that's in the Hall of Fame with Miami, Van Horn.
Van Horn, yeah.
And a bunch of the guys lived in the same building, and it was a blast. It was a walking city for the most part. But, yeah, that's, you know, I don't know if they could do it on that same site, but baseball, they love sport. I mean, Montreal had AAA back when, you know, Roberto Clemente played there and Jackie Robinson and Tommy Lasorda, and they had baseball there, you know. They just, that stadium was just so old, and it had holes in the roof when it rained. I mean, you could hear leaks in it, and the AstroTurf was so hard, you could see patches of cement through it. So, I mean, if they had a new stadium, I think it would survive. But, you know, they stopped coming. Fortunately for me, you know, I got a job with Texas right after that. I had a 2-year deal to stay. I loved it. And George Bush asked me, he said, if I give you a 1-year deal, will you take it? When he interviewed me for the Texas managing job, I said, no. Mm-hmm. He goes, well, why not? You've always taken 1-year deals in the minor leagues. I said, that's just the point. And he started laughing. He liked that. A little smirk that he used to get, you know, when he was president. It wasn't being a smartass. That's just his little his grin, and he liked that. He liked that little, I used to call him a whippersnapper. And he said, you little smart aleck, I like that. I said, I have a good situation in Montreal. I said, I didn't manage all those years in the minors to take a 1-year deal and get fired if we're not winning after the first month.
Right.
I said, and start all over again. I said, so you got to give me at least a couple of years. And, you know, as it turned out, you know the rest of the story. But it was great. But I would have loved to stay in Montreal. And by 94, the strike year, they ended up having the best record in baseball, better than the Braves. They would have won it. They might have won it all that year. They were that good. Because all those young guys through the system, some of the key trades that were made, I mean, you look at that outfield of Marquise Grissom and Larry Walker, and if people forget about Yvonne Calderon could flat-out hit, but Moises Alou was our fourth outfielder, and John Vanderwall was our fifth outfielder. That's just the outfield. And then Wallach was still there, and Spike Owen was at short, and Tom Foley was there. He was great. You know, we had three catchers, and you know, Rick Cerrone and Gary Carter's last year, and it was, you know, sad for Gary, but a great last year he had, and I got to know Gary well. God rest his soul. And then we traded for Darren Fletcher, and I was one of my guys in AAA. If you look at those clubs, a lot of those guys are my guys that I had in the minor leagues that Dan trusted me with evaluation. And so we got Wetland and later Pedro and then John Wetland, you know, three guys that I had coming up in the minor leagues. So that was kind of fun to be able to be part of that. But that's why I love help building young teams. So they did it with a low payroll. But unfortunately, when those guys became free agents, they couldn't sign any of them, you know, and that's what killed Montreal. When the strike happened and baseball got canceled, it was done. But I think it could survive. I'd love to see baseball in Montreal. I really would. Tremendous city. People love sports, and they will come if you keep your players.
You know, when I was thinking about that, I thought, can we even do a strike anymore? I don't think you can do that anymore after what's happened. Mm-hmm. And it really was 94, and we're 23 years later. And I'm thinking to myself, you couldn't do it. And I remember talking to somebody. I can't even remember who it was. It was from the Phillies. And I remember he said, it's not going to happen. It was the day before. And he said, it's not going to happen. And the strike was that night. And I just, you know, I remember that, and I think they can't get away with that now.
No.
There's so much money, you just can't.
No, on both sides. I told a story to a friend the other day about George Bush. In fact, it was the Dodgers. I was talking to Eric Braverman of the Dodgers. We had a big meeting Friday, and they called me in. They said they'd add me to the alumni, this and that. And I said, he didn't realize George Bush hired me. And he's the broadcast director with the Dodgers. And I was telling him a story about that. I said, yeah. And I said, you know, that year of the strike, in 1994, George told me that tell the players when you have your meeting, because they knew they were going to strike in August. We all knew it. And they picked that date. And we all knew it was coming because we were at home at the time, playing Seattle, and I told them, I had a team meeting the day before. I said, if you guys actually go through this with this, I'm told by our managing general partner and owner, George Bush, that the season will be canceled. He told me to tell them that. And I actually didn't even believe that, but he told me to tell them that. And Chris James, who I love, is a Texas guy, and great guy, good player, outfielder, said, Skip, we'll see you in 2 weeks after the meeting was over. And I said, Chris, I don't think so. And George is dead. So one thing I know about him is he's going to shoot you straight. At least he has with me and everything he's told me behind the scenes. And sure enough, I waited. We all waited in Texas, and, you know, didn't really work out or anything. I lived there. I had an apartment there, and, you know, there's nothing going on. We're just waiting to see if baseball's going to resume. And when it got canceled, man, I don't think I've ever been more down, because it was only my second year managing in the big leagues. We were in first place, even though our record was below 500. The only time I've ever had a team below 500 ever, but yet we're in first place. The whole division was below 500. But, you know, La Russa had Oakland and Lou Piniella had Seattle, and yet we were in first place by a game. And we thought, I remember watching the Mariners last game after they left us, and they had to lose for us to maintain first place. And they did. And I was with a couple of my coaches, Jackie Moore and Claude Ossie. And I said, oh, that means if when they resume, we're going to win. It's like, I thought it was going to be like 81, you know, where the Dodgers, right. You know, the first half, second half. I thought when the season resumed in late September, they were just going to play the playoffs. So I thought we were in. And so I was excited about that. But then when they canceled the season, you know, a week later, I went, oh, man. Or 2 weeks later, it was over. No, I don't think you'll ever – I mean, I should never say never, but if they do it today, you're going to cut your own, you know, hand off, because there's so much money everybody's making in the game today, the players, the owners, everybody. I mean, it's unbelievable. When players can start buying clubs, which is what guys are doing now,
right.
that tells you how much money they're making. I mean, it's insane. You know, what's funny, babe, I was reading a story about, you know, Sandy Koufax's really good friend was Andy Messersmith, and I look him up.
Yeah.
From time to time, I like to see, because I was reading about Valentin. I said, "What? I wonder what happened to Messersmith, because he was a great pitcher, by the way. Great pitcher. Look him up sometime." And he was the one that started, him and Dave McNally started free agency.
Right.
And he ended up, you know, wanting a no-trade clause from the Dodgers. They wouldn't give it to him. Peter Seitz, I think was his name. I think it was Seitz. And anyway, it went to arbitrator, and they agreed with the players, and he and Dave McNally became free agents, and that started the whole thing. And I was just reading that last night, as a matter of fact. I went, man, I knew the story a little bit, but not in detail. I said, man, imagine what that created. And he was looking at and he ends up getting a 3-year deal at $1 million from Ted Turner is what he got after that. I mean, that was a lot of money in those days, but I'm thinking about, can they imagine what guys are now when you're talking about Zach Greinke at 200 and some odd thousand for
the average player that gets a whole lot more? I mean, Zach Greinke can get a lot, but an average player is making a ton of money, and good for you.
That's right. That's right. That's exactly right. I mean, you know, it's one thing for Kershaw to get a deal making $300 million. I mean, that's incredible. Can you imagine what a Koufax would have been worth?
No disrespect.
But I mean, you know, to anybody, or Willie Mays would have been worth, or Hank Aaron, or any of these guys, or Babe Ruth. I mean, it's unbelievable. So, yeah, I can't see, they keep signing these 5-year deals, and I can't see any reason why there'd ever be a strike again, because the players, I mean, they basically run the asylum. Now, what's different with the Dodgers is that they are not afraid to eat money and release a player. So they will sign a lot of guys, but like Brian Wilson, who's trying to come back as a knuckleballer, they gave him a 2-year extension, Ned Colletti did, after he had a little stint with the Dodgers a few years ago and looked pretty good. And so Ned gives him a 2-year deal at $20 million guaranteed, and he pitches the first year of that contract and didn't pitch very well. And when Andrew came in, they just released him. They ate $10 million. They just, you know, wanted to go a different direction, so to speak. I mean, who could eat $10 million today? I mean, the Rays can't.
No.
Montreal couldn't have, you know, but the Dodgers did.
But the Dodgers can, because of everything that goes on, the TV and everything that goes with it. You know, one of the things I was thinking about, that it seems to me that if you've got something that's that, I mean, I don't know what's it like in LA. Can you just get the games the way I get it on TV, or do you have to pay for them, or what?
No, it's a problem. No, it's an issue. That's a big issue, because they paid $8.25 billion for 25 years, a TV contract, right, to go to the Dodgers. yet it's basically a monopoly. So if you have Time Warner Cable, which is now called Spectrum out here, then you can get the game. If you don't, if you have Charter or Verizon or one of these other cable companies and you're not in the right area, you're not getting the game. So still, as we speak, 65% of the people in L.A. didn't see a game last year on TV. And that's a problem with what's going on right now. I mean, it used to be, you know, and that really upset people because Vin Scully was retiring. So we would hear it every year about, well, they'll get the deal done, just like the Lakers and just like Steinbrenner with the YES Network. And they say, oh, they'll get it done within a year. Well, it's been 5 years now, and or 4 years, whatever, since they've owned the club. And it's not, deal's not done. It's still not done. And it's, I don't see it being done.
You know, one
and
of
so,
the...
so it's a whole different thing out here. So they, people have to come. The people do come to the stadium, I'll say that. And Stan Kasten and his group have redone Dodger Stadium in good ways. They haven't taken away the old things that people loved back in the 60s about the stadium, but they've added all the modern amenities of suites and more food stands and more restrooms for everybody and just everything. And so it's really nice looking. And so they average over 48,000 because they have a good team. But if you don't go to the game, and if you don't have that particular cable channel, you're not watching it.
Well, and one of the things you were saying about the suites, and I'm thinking to myself, well, that's great for the Dodgers and that's great for the Yankees and the Red Sox. But what if you're playing even in Miami or Tampa or something like that, or you're in Cleveland or something? It's a little harder to do that, isn't it? I mean, like, it's nice that you have those suites and you have all those people in L.A. that are doing everything in the world. But, you know, even like the Texas Rangers, I'm not so sure.
Yeah, no, it's tough. Now, you know, the TV packages like on your computer and all that, I'm not even 100% sure on the road if they get them all or not, to be honest with you, because I've been with the team on the road a lot. But unless you have a special, you know, deal like MLB will give to the broadcasters, if you stay home, you can get the games, you know, no matter where they are, home or not. But if they're at home and you've got a computer and you got an MLB TV and you pay your $100 fee or whatever it is now, you can see every other game, but it gets blacked out in L.A.
It doesn't seem right, especially because now I'm to the point now, if I go, I mean, I was at the Cape a lot this summer, and so I watched a lot of the Red Sox games, and I thought to myself, it's always there. I never think about it. I see it here whenever I want to when I'm in Florida, but, you know, I can't even believe being in L.A., you can't even get the Dodgers games.
No, it's crazy. No, I mean, and some of these packages too. We used to get a lot of calls on Sirius XM when I was doing that full time, even years ago. That, you know, they'd always ask us about certain areas. If you're in an area that's in between, you know, St. Louis and Chicago and some of the places in the Midwest. I mean, there's certain areas where they get blacked out of their own team if they're just that 2 miles to the west of this particular town or whatever.
Yeah.
It's crazy. People are asking us, Rob Bibble and I, we were together on the air, if we could find out. And, you know, you really couldn't. It was really complicated. And we try to help people and get as much info as we can. But, you know, we always go, you got to call your cable provider. And they never really, people never really got explanations. So it was really, I think it's better now, but I would bet there's still problems with that particular thing. And, you know, that's what's funny about watching games growing up as a kid in the 60s and, you know, even in the 70s is that, you know, now people, if they can't see every team in every game, they get upset. You know, well, then in the old days, you only saw the game of the week, which was usually the Yankees. And, and I know growing up in L.A. as a kid, the only local games you saw is when the Dodgers played the Giants. That's the only time the Dodgers were ever on TV. You know, so if they played the Giants 20 times, which is what they used to do when they had, you know, 16 teams total or 20 teams total. They played the Giants like 20 times, and that's when you would see them play. That's why we got to know the Giants so well. But you'd never see anybody else unless the Dodgers were the game of the week. So you had to go to the games or listen to Vin Scully, which was great.
We wouldn't have mind that, listening to Vin Scully.
Nobody did mind it. No, we all did that, and that's why those of us that are of that age and that era – love Vin Scully. I mean, the young guys do too. Young people do too. They got a chance to listen to Vin, but I mean, really, the people that grew up in the '60s that heard Vin And when you didn't see every single game, I mean, he was the guy. You know, you listen to the old transistor, and you go to the stadium and bring the radio. And people used to listen to him on the radio while they're watching the game live. That's how good he was.
Crazy. You know, because I probably think it in the MLB, but I see it in the NFL. When they go to the Pro Bowl, I'm like, I don't need to see that. I've seen everybody. I mean, I say, okay, you saw the Giants. I see a lot of the Giants. Well, you know, 30 years ago, they haven't played Oakland, so that'll be good. We don't care about it in the NFL. We don't care about the – I mean, it's fun to go out and see the home runs and all that stuff for Major League Baseball, but we've seen every team play every other team.
Well, you know what was interesting? We got the Rams back here in L.A., right, and on local Channel 11, right, which is the Fox. In L.A., Fox is on, the national Fox, with the pregame show is, you know, Terry Bradshaw and Howie Long and those guys is on Fox. So we wouldn't get a Fox game, national game. We would get the local Rams, and they were so bad, I would turn it off. I wouldn't want. I'd turn it to CBS to watch the other the AFC game. You know, it was that bad because they were awful. You know, I mean, that's how bad it was. You didn't have a choice, you know, unless you had the NFL channel and all that, which, you know, it's a whole different story. But I'm just saying, if you had over-the-air TV, this year it was awful because the Rams were just terrible. So it's interesting, this whole thing. But TV has certainly driven it. You know that the money. That's what you have to explain to the players when they complain about delay time and stuff like that in the playoffs. They said, "Hey, don't delay it, man. The extra minute is putting money in your pocket. From 2 minutes to 3 minutes, that extra minute in between innings is why you're making $206 million."
Do we love him or what? Kevin Kennedy, I've known such a long time. And it's funny because we go back to the Red Sox times and how much I was really so, like, I'm not into them now, but I still am. But it's kind of interesting. He's done so many things in Texas and all that stuff. And I thought it was interesting, too, about Montreal. He said they'd be great there right now. I would assume it'd be the Rays. I haven't seen the Rays. I mean, I've seen them on TV, but I haven't gone there at all in the last year or so or something like that. It's good. Listen to him. We will do more with him coming up later on in baseball season. Oh, I always have things to tell you about. I'm watching this show on PBS, and I tried to watch it a couple of times, and I would turn it off because I didn't know what they were saying. I thought maybe it was Chinese. Then I find out that they're from Scotland. But it's not like Edinburgh, which is on this side of Great Britain, but is way the hell up there. Glasgow is way the hell up there in Scotland, way up there. Well, I don't even understand what these people are saying. I saw this guy, and he was, I thought, was the bad guy. And at the very end, he's putting on a coat, and that's the end of it. And I said, oh, he must have been the bad guy, because I couldn't get what was going on. Then I turn it on this week, and the guy's standing and waiting for them to take him away. I said, it's going away. I do not understand what these people are saying. And they're speaking English. That's the problem. You could say it's me. We could make a decision about that. But I'm telling you, it's really, really hard to figure it out. And I'm sure it's the best thing in the whole world in Scotland, but I cannot get it together, and I'm trying hard. I'll try again. When's it come up? Wednesday or something? I just put it on the DVR. You know, I'm into the DVR big time now. I just love it. I just let things run the whole time. I watched Live in Alaska. You know, I have no desire to be in Alaska, but I just watched. I love that. I love that. Anyway, I'll do other stuff. I have to do stuff here. Just a minute. It happens to be the Babecast. We're on Radio Influence, iTunes, and everything else. See if you can find us. Goodbye.
If you know the Babe at all, you'll know the show never ends. Follow her on Twitter at Real Sports Babe and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. This has been The Fabulous Sports Bit on Radio Influence. This is an Ian Beckles Flavor in Your Ear Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
You see the Grammys at all? You watch the Grammys?
Nope.
You don't watch the Grammys at all?
Nope.
A couple of three people got to lose their jobs okay?
Are going to lose their jobs?
Yes, 100%. Okay. So when my boy from Metallica comes up there with Lady Gaga,
and
they don't turn his mic on.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Okay, so I watched that closely. I know what's going to happen.
Right.
And I'm watching, and he's, because my wife goes, doesn't he know he can't hear himself? I go, you can't hear yourself.
He's got his ear.
Yes, if you hear yourself, you're in trouble.
Right.
So I go, he has no idea that that's not getting out to the masses. And he went up to it three times, okay? At the end, I had my eye on him the whole time. He took his guitar off his head and threw his guitar, which is probably very expensive, throws his guitar, knocks down the mic stand, and he was pissed. Like, these guys, job was to make sure that sound was okay.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
And you couldn't turn on a microphone?
Dude.
That was bad, bro.
That was
really bad.
It's like the Mariah thing that happened on New Year's where, you know, she said she couldn't hear her earbuds or whatever. And they kept saying that she didn't want to sound check beforehand. And this is why we're supposed to sound check.
No, she didn't.
Or okay. That's who you're old.
Like Lady Gaga at the Super Bowl, I thought.
She didn't lip sync at all.
At the beginning, she did.
She may have because of where she was coming from.
Yeah, she was singing over a track. And then when she sat down, then she started to sing.
Right.
She can sing.
Sure. She can sing.
A lot of them can't.
Right.
At all. You know? Studio. Britney Spears ain't never, never.
Yeah, not a big fan.
And one time I took my daughter to see Hilary Duff. That was the worst
I feel bad for you.
I've ever heard in my life.
Hilary Duff.
That was the worst. She's the worst singer I've ever heard. That's hard to say. She had a concert, and she was the worst singer I ever heard.
You can find Ian Beckles' Flavor in Your Ear on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.